The difference between a job and a good job. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. A crucial number for retirees came in this morning. The cost of living increase for Social Security for next year will be just 0.3%, meaning the average Social Security payment goes up $5 a month, $13.55 to $13.60 a month. This at a time of generally low inflation, although there was also word this morning that inflation last month went up 0.3%, just in a month. Food, gasoline, rent. Here's Julie Neiman, the analyst at Smith Moore & Company in St. Louis.
Some economists are saying with the CPI up 0.3%, you're getting very close to achieving the target rate with the Fed. On the other hand, with the core rate being down there, it's remarkably subdued here, and there's not going to be any pressure on the Fed to move ahead in a brisk fashion. Inflation very definitely is very much within bounds of what the Federal Reserve is looking for.
I'll tell you what makes sometimes these consumer inflation numbers tough to swallow for many people is that we all have to live somewhere, and that price is often going up if you're renting or if you're buying.
Exactly. So and mortgage rates are likely to stay down here for some time. We're seeing a little bit of a tick up here. If you happen to be in the market right now, this is a swell time to lock in this very low mortgage rate. But the biggest problem we're facing right now is housing availability as well. New home sales and prices were up almost 7% in September, and you're going to see rising construction costs as well, another indication that inflation is hitting us here. Fall-winter are slow times for construction anyway, but we're seeing wages in construction rising and the absolute basic costs for materials rising. So that's real inflation, and it's going to increase the price of housing.
Julie Neiman at Smith Moore & Company, St. Louis. Thank you.
You bet.
With unemployment down at 5% and between 100 and 200,000 more people signing on to payrolls each month, the labor market isn't quite the mess it was at the beginning of the recovery. But how well do those jobs meet our needs and our expectations? As we continue our coverage of the latest data from Marketplace's national survey with Edison Research, we'll take a look today at how we're feeling about the jobs we have and the jobs that we'd want. From the Marketplace desk at Oregon Public Broadcasting, Mitchell Hartman reports.
I'm in the service bay at Hawthorne Auto Clinic. It's a family-owned business on a busy Portland commercial strip next to a karate school and a coffee shop. Sarah Heidler is 48. She started working here more than a year ago after finishing a mechanics training program.
This is a fantastic job.
What makes it a good job?
Benefits and the fact that the owners actually care about people and really invest in people.
Heidler's priorities match the results from our Marketplace Edison Research economic poll. Respondents put health benefits at the top of the list for what makes a good job. Nearly three-quarters of them say it's essential. Heidler has two kids, the youngest still in high school, and she's had her share of bad jobs, minimum wage, no health insurance.
An assistant manager at a convenience store. I work in 45 to 50 hours a week and still eligible for food stamps.
Fellow mechanic Jeremy Smith says a good job first pays the bills and second provides a path for advancement.
For me, it's training because I'm trying to grow, I'm trying to get better, and it's all paid for, it's all just part of the deal.
He used to work in printing where he didn't see much opportunity, but he says everyone needs skilled mechanics these days.
Once you get into an in-demand field, it sort of changes my perception of a job from being something that I have to do to something that I can move around and I can get paid well anywhere.
For many, decent pay and health benefits are just a starting point. Victoria Edwards lives in New York City. She's 32, works part-time as a tutor, and is also a graduate student.
You need to have your basic needs met in order to really focus on your job.
The next most important thing for her is career path.
I want to know, like, the guidelines. I want it to be structured. I want good communication so I know, like, where I am on every step of the way.
In our poll, several of the top requirements for a good job weren't about pay and benefits at all. They included a good working environment, opportunities for advancement, and making a worker feel valued. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
There is news this week that the high school graduation rate in America is higher than ever. More than 83% of high school seniors finished on time in 2015. But how prepared are those graduates for college and the workplace? From the Marketplace Education Desk at WYPR in Baltimore, Amy Scott reports.
That 83% graduation rate is up from about 71% a decade ago.
That translates into more than 2 million more students graduating from high school rather than dropping out.
John Bridgeland with the public policy firm Civic Enterprises says with a diploma, they're less likely to be incarcerated or live in poverty and more likely to be employed. But they aren't necessarily prepared for college or careers. Andy Smerick with the American Enterprise Institute says half of students take at least one remedial class in college, meaning stuff they were supposed to learn in high school. In community college, as many as 70% need remediation.
We've asked educators to get more kids to graduate, and they have succeeded at that, and so we should be proud. The next hurdle is making sure that high school graduation is synonymous with college and career readiness, and we're not there yet.
And even as more students graduate, 12th grade reading and math scores have been fairly stagnant over the past decade. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
Now, it's typically the most boring story in the world when the U.S. government goes out and sells its debt, but not for Saudi Arabia, which begins borrowing from the world for the first time tomorrow. Not unlike Boeing or Airbus reps going out on the road to sell airplanes, Saudi officials have been doing road shows. Here's our debt. Here's why we think it's a great deal. For some context, let's turn to John Sfakianakis, Director of Economic Research at the Gulf Research Center in Riyadh, with some reasons for this.
One, it is trying to do it for the first time. Two, the appetite is definitely there, but also it needs to explain to the international community of itself. We know from different published sources that they do see oil as a risk on the downside, but at the same time, they cannot tell the world where they would like to have oil in the future. So it's a challenge for them. But definitely on the buying side, I think that the bond is going to be hugely oversubscribed, given that Saudi Arabia is the most important oil producing country, not just in the Middle East, but also in the world.
The question for international investors who might be interested in buying some of this debt is, what is Saudi Arabia's future prospects? The Saudi government would like the investors to know that they are radically changing these days.
They are changing. They announced not too long ago the 2030 vision. They aspire to be diversified more and more away from oil. And also they want to aspire to have greater sources of revenue from the non-oil segment of the economy. So with that in mind, they do want to go out to the international bond market and get more value.
John Sfakianakis at the Gulf Research Center in Riyadh, thank you for this.
Thank you.
And the battle of the robots this election cycle. Some British academics figured out how to count which pro-Trump and pro-Clinton tweets were automated and which were human. Turns out four times as many robot tweets were for Trump than for Clinton. The field, by the way, is called computational propaganda. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.